when I was first studying immigration history, I was interested, confused, and appalled by the racial violence that's woven in the immigrant story. And when I started to pursue that and look into our country and our country's history, one of the first things I noticed that was that that I didn't know that you had to be white in order to naturalize from 1790 to 1952. So for the majority of this country's history, from the first naturalization law in 1790 to 1952, you had to be white. Or after the Civil War, you could be white. I mean, you could be a person of African descent, but you couldn't be Asian. You couldn't be referred to as non-white. So a lot, the experience of immigrants and groups coming to this country was filtered through this idea that to become an American and to, you had to become and assimilate into whiteness. It wasn't just that there was a racial prerequisite law that was woven into the experience. And so what I discovered was there is a struggle of each immigrant group coming in to distance themselves from the color line border in the United States. Because the poorer you are, the more likely you were to work with the lowest caste in the American economic system, which was either slaves or free blacks. And that association, if you became associated with being blacks, then you were more likely to have your labor exploited, justification of violence and exclusion of you from the American dream and possibility. So you see immigrants trying to assimilate into a situation where to become American was to become white. And the violence or the noose of it is in American history, we had two, quote, domestic enemies that are referred to in the Constitution and the founding and woven throughout. And the first was Native Americans who might fight against their land being taken and the genocide against them, and African Americans who are labeled domestic enemies because the fear of revolts of enslaved African Americans and the threat they posed. So, for example, the rights to own guns in the Constitution is related specifically to a militia that will keep the domestic enemy, the enslaved African Americans, from revolting. And so what I discovered was that, as we all know, that one of the best ways to prove that you're American is to fight for our country against a foreign enemy. But the other way to prove that you're American has historically been to fight against one of the domestic enemies, either an Indian person or an African American, and prove that you are part of the white governing establishment and worthy of the vote, worthy of rights, etc.
Of course, this isn't in history anymore. I mean, this is still going on. We've seen white supremacists on the streets. Immigration really is an undercurrent in this. And then, of course, the White House themselves saying, well, we're going to change certain visas, so you have to be English speaking, all very much coded language from, you know, well, we will select the countries where we want people to come from. Yet we don't often look back in history. And I know so much of the work that Modus Theatre does is saying this is something that we've lived through that we've never really reconciled. How can we help us understand what's going on now by maybe looking back at some of the history that you've outlined there in terms of our immigration policies here?
Modus really believes that unless you understand the true history, then you're not going to create true solutions to those problems. And that it's really important to know that history, and especially the history of racial violence has been marginalized, people of color, has been literally put to the margin, footnoted and edited out of our history. But if we learn that history, then we can be more skillful about how we address it. Because I think a lot of people of all ethnicities, races, I mean, there are no races, but raced people, whether white, black, Asian American, we Italian Americans, we all want to shift. We're appalled. The majority of people are appalled by what's happening in Charlottesville. The majority of people are appalled. But I think realizing different ways we participate in it and different ways we can actually take a stand and a lie on it. For example, when Kaepernick, the football player who went to his knee during the national anthem in protest of the fact America was not standing up for the lives of black people, he got criticism ubiquitous from the NFL. And NFL is, you know, riddled with issues around domestic violence and rape and all kinds of stuff. And that's been problematic. But in terms of the virulent within the NFL administration, that was the worst thing he could have done. And yet, if you know American history, you know that the national anthem, third verse, was written to celebrate the death of African-Americans who had run away from being slaves to fight with the British. You know that Keyes was the owned slaves. You know that he was the brother-in-law of the Supreme Court Justice Taney, who wrote the most infamous court decision, the Dred Scott decision, in American history in terms of its racism. Racism is woven into that national anthem and how it was chosen in the battles around in the late 1920s and early 1930s. So to be a good patriotic American, I think we need to question when we actually say, I'm going to sit down in order to stand up, whether it's with the American anthem, the national anthem, and saying, you know, it's time for a different national anthem. In order to, for the need of what I would say is for white people to realize that these policies, whether we're talking about, you know, we hear from the national government, issues like law and order, make America great again, that these come straight out of the nativist attacks of the 1920s, the very racist quota laws that were originally to prevent in the 1924 Immigration Act to prevent Eastern Europeans, read Jews, and Southern European, read Italians, for immigrating to the United States, that white supremacist language is woven through bills and legislative fights and presidential races that we have right now. And it's important to learn this history and really question some of the dehumanizing tactics that have been used to make, whether it's refugees fleeing, children fleeing Central America as an invaders and the enemy, and hear that from our government officials, that we're having an invasion of Central American children. This language is very dangerous. It's part of a huge legacy, and it's happening now, and it's happening with people who would condemn David Duke and would condemn this, but they're still participating in racial scripts that dehumanize other people, and particularly darker-skinned immigrant people.
All of this is happening at a time when we're seeing a massive solar eclipse, and you try to kind of make a connection when you look back in history. These types of times are a time for disruption, maybe a time to shake up the status quo. I mean, do you see a real opportunity for people now that we are having conversations in platforms that we have never had conversations about race before? We're having those conversations, that maybe there's an opportunity to change things?
You know, I do. Frederick Douglass, when the Supreme Court Justice Taney made his infamous Dred Scott decision, said, this is an amazing opportunity because this is so over the top that Americans are going to stand up and say this is not all right. And sure enough, Dred Scott decision and the reaction to it was part of the momentum towards the Civil War and the ending of that form of legalized slavery. And similarly, I think today, the violence of white supremacy that has been echoed and amplified in presidential politics. I think people are seeing more clearly that this is not all right, and we have an opportunity. And so, what interests me about this whole eclipse is eclipses in general are seen as a time where, like, oh no, then. Not in every tradition, but in most traditions, where the natural order is being, things are being threatened, and that a time of fear, like, uh-oh, the natural order could be disturbed. But I see it as a really fecund opportunity to think, like, hey, literally the stars are aligned to create a new order, and we need one, because in the United States, the established order really comes out of huge legacies of violence against Native peoples to justify the taking of land and violence against African Americans and to justify the exploitation of labor. And that we have an opportunity to kind of shift things around and say, hey, that was, we can think of other ways of being in relationship to this land, other ways of being in relationship to honoring people's labor, other ways of considering who is and who is not an American, and whose lives actually really do matter to our country. And I think this is a good opportunity. And so we'll be dealing with a lot of painful history, and I really hope that people will come. I've spent a lot of time reading history so that I have something to offer. We don't generally have months to take off and just focus on history. So I hope people will come learn more about this history and also reflect, because the scenic changes throughout the performance are these eclipses where we get to sit in the dark together and just really breathe in this, the sacred act of creation and being participating and envisioning a new world, a new way of being in relationship with each other that is more equitable and honorable. And I think everyone would benefit from that.